Hello, everyone. This is the Cohen Meanderer. You are listening to Jason Demro, Yasson Ben David Hakohen. And I was reading this morning. Ether. The end of Ether 10. This is several generations of at first it was a man, I forget what, you know, I don't think the actual genealogies are all that weird, except that it seems to be a story written by Ether later on, who may have been a a certain branch, a more direct descendant, I don't know, of the brother of Jared or something along those lines. Anyway, at certain points in the story, it would talk about the righteousness of kings, you know. it talked about the secret combinations. At the very end, it talks about secret combinations again, as the kings weren't able to get much traction. Against them, which is to speak well for the people making the effort. I remember Hartrom was one of the captives of the king. And I was trying to sit here and think about it, because when I think of people being multi-generational captives, which he was one of them, that I think of that Battlestar Galactica episode. It was a rather early one, so I think it was one that they had worked up as the original package for Battlestar Galactica, the 1978 version, when I was a kid. And it was just this old prison. I don't know if the entire planet was the prison. I don't know. Anyway. And, yeah, people who had been sent to these prisons, it seemed like 1,000 years. And, had been pretty much forgotten that certain kinds of pecking order, but so it became almost cultural that they made ambrosia, which is a drink, and they didn't really mix much, but that long ago the actual latches to all the doors had long ago stopped working, but that they would stay in their cells anyway. Even if you were to go to open the door and say, look, you can get out. They would go, no, 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 go back in. Shut the door. And you go, but they don't work. And it just seemed, so it was a little bizarre in that, I don't think things would have behaved that way. I think somebody would have learned how to be rebellious, especially since there seemed to be ambrosia around, which was, you know, which was an alcoholic beverage, and everybody needed, and I, it seems like people were partaking of it on some level. I don't know if that was the justification for why they were willing to let themselves stay in these conditions. Regardless, I was trying to fit that motif in with this whole idea from the Book of Ether and the Book of Mormon that people, but you get the impression from the way it's stated sometimes. You have to understand that this was somewhat of a foreign concept to Moroni, who for a very long time seemed to be, you know, the Nephites have been ruled over by judges, and judges administered the law that was set down by Mosiah, probably from his and probably from his father too, Benjamin. It was a circumstance, or at least the Book of Mormon, it doesn't talk, you know, it only talks about kind of political sorts of things on a political stage. Once or twice, it's like the law was set. This is kind of like the law of Moses. The law of Moses was set. I mean, there were lawyers, you know, I guess these were called Pharisees then, who spent a lot of time, interpreting the law, I don't know, trying to find, you know, making enhancements to them, trying to diminish others perhaps, things like that. This was very much a time of kings, and Moses wasn't a king, although he was the definite leader of the Israelite people, but he wasn't a king, and he never attributed himself such. If there were going to be something akin to a king, it would be God. And God set down the law. How it was administered was kind of left up to whoever. That was when came Jethro to Moses and saying, you're working yourself way too hard. People constantly bend your ear by everything. And I think it was about mostly about interpretations of what the laws were, what constituted obedience to the laws already given, and really what ended up being how far can I go before I break a law? You know, can I where are the lines, if I want to stay just on one side or on the other side of it, what can you get away with? And whole concept as we have now of laws being basically, okay, you have to understand, our system is actually based on the British parliamentary system, which I think was ultimately based on, it was vaguely Anglo-Saxon. And this stuff was modeled, I think, after Rome, which was vaguely modeled after the quote Grecian democracy. I think that's why people like using the word democracy. This is a democracy, and you go, no, it's not. Says it wasn't made that way. We found out that democracy was a mess. That becomes rule of the mob. You kind of trust in the fact that the mob isn't going to turn on you, but we see in the Book of Mormon, for instance, under a static bunch of rules and judges to apply these rules and apply the needed punishments and whatever to keep order. These things were really quite foreign. Our if nothing else, our Constitution was an attempt to meld. I think would probably be the best way to look at it. Meld an established law, which is the Constitution in the United States, to a somewhat parliamentary form of government, such as we have now, you know. Our system, our bicameral system, was based on the House of Commons and the House of Lords. We couldn't call them that because we were breaking away from England and we didn't want to have anything to do with them. But our leadership was accustomed to this way of working to the point to where larger principles and larger laws, like in the British system, don't exist. Britain didn't have an overall constitution. It had kings. And kings could dictate a certain amount. That has been made so that royalty now really doesn't involve itself in those kinds of decisions. They have devolved that entire thing to Parliament. You know, the most important person in Great Britain, for instance, isn't particularly the king. He's just kind of a figurehead, I guess. Owns a lot of stuff as royalty, but he doesn't really wield much real power, although Most of the institutions are still called in the king's name. We have a king now. Britain has a king now. And that's who you swear loyalty to. So, the modern, like, British monarchy has more in common with the Constitution being kind of a fleshy embodiment of British they've recently written the Constitution. I think it's interesting to try to establish things that really can't be easily altered. They saw the American version and said, you know, we could have something akin to that. Although they didn't go so far as to enumerate rights that you couldn't just vote out of existence. They didn't go to that length. So it really isn't a constitution such as the United States, where certain principles are supposed to be unquestioned. It seems in the past a lot of people could get together. I think that comes from early America being of a certain stock, not really a certain kind of, not like a certain guy. I'm struggling. Not from a certain country or stuff like that. Although there was quite a bit of British influence, a lot of other people came into America too. Not so much. But, you know, it didn't become the massive grind of immigrants, like it did later on. Pretty early, it was the British Isles, come over here. And you would continue to get waves of this, you know. The Irish came over, but they had basically been part of the British Empire for a long time. Only recently had they broken away and started doing things differently, but not sizably differently. Modeled themselves on the British model as well. Anyway. It was easier to change the Constitution back then. Of course, it was also made easier by the fact that half of the country who had different ideas were basically enslaved. And I'm not talking about black slaves. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the North's conquerance of the South. And that was where came a lot of the, you know, the 13th, 14th, there was a whole slew of amendments to the Constitution that were basically easily pressed through by what remained of free America, which didn't include the South. It was a long time until the South was able to rid itself of its enslavement and an almost punitive North would come in and make this stuff happen. The institution of government, I think in many Southern states, was still being somewhat run by carpetbaggers. And, I don't know. I think there was a little time where it was disgruntled freed slaves. But that pretty much died out as everything kind of got back to kind of the genteel, you know, you have black servants. And, but you have kindly, or at least this is the kind of picture that was taken. I remember the movie It's a Wonderful Life, and it was very interesting. The Baileys, for their sort of reputation for kind of being I don't want to say lower class, but living kind of paycheck to paycheck sorts of people, they had a car cook. She was basically a servant. And even though the servant and Mrs. Bailey were somewhat chummy, see, and this came from the late 40s. The World War II had been won in that thing, but there was still the servant, and you kind of get the impression that Bedford Falls was not like Georgia or South Carolina. I don't know exactly where they said it, but it seemed like it had almost kind of a New England or a Rust Belt feel to it. And yeah, and you're going, wow, these guys were still, you know, while slavery was gotten rid of, you didn't own these people, they were still basically put into being a servant class. And we all know about the civil rights thing. It was into the 50s. And starting in the 60s, that such people were still that kind of way, still being treated in that kind of fashion. Interesting. Anyway. But yeah, it just goes to show you that there was an entire section of the country that had basically been enslaved. And when you say, oh yeah, the blacks, you go, no, I'm talking about the South. I'm talking about these people down South. This is they were second class people and could be primarily ignored. They had their own little intrigues down the South, but if the North needed something to happen, you know, like constitutional amendments and stuff like that, they could accomplish this without having to really do anything about the South. They were sufficiently cowed, and I think governmental power structure was still being run by people who had been put into place by the winning of the war. But you got to know that the 1860s were only 100 years away, and people think 100 years is a long time. My dad was born in the 40s. He grew up. He has a certain sense of sensibilities, and I understand that. It isn't a long time. It's like maybe two or three generations of people. People who governed over, it's called the Reconstruction South, which was mostly Northerners going to the South and running things the way that they would like them to be run. And that this was still this didn't need a lot of generations to do things. The grandfathers of the up and coming leadership in the 1960s were the same group that ruled over post-Civil War South. So these things take quite a time to change. And they really haven't. So anyway, coming back to Ether and the whole idea of they had an entirely different system. Now, the Jaredites were from a completely different universe in the first place. They didn't have the law of Moses. They weren't from that generation. They were far older. And they just simply had kings. Now, when it came down to it, Jared, the brother of Jared, did not want to be king. Finally, one of their kids agreed to be the king. And that's what kind of kicked off the whole thing about having kings. This apparently was something that they were accustomed to. I don't know where the aversion, probably Jared and the brother of Jared and their ilk had, you know, part of the reason for their separation from other people was the Tower of Babel. They didn't really call themselves kings, but it sure sounds like they acted like them. You know, and they were building this great, huge public project, the Tower of Babel, in order to get to heaven. Or at least that was what was said. And interesting interesting world. So we don't know exactly what kind of a structure they came from. This was soon after Noah. These were more Noahide principles. But it seemed like many of the family, because that's what it was one family, congregated in certain places and didn't really spread out and do, you know, the as far as I'm aware of, God had said, you need to go out, you need to repopulate the earth. And they were doing a bad job. I don't know where they got the idea that they could build a tower to get to heaven. But regardless, all their languages were confused. They went off into different territories and they started their own places, which is what God really wanted them to do in the first place, was spread out and start populating the earth again. He got into the situation of not just having to tell them to do this, he had to force them. It's interesting that during all this time, Noah was still alive. It seems like Noah was not in the press of affairs at all. He was not leading as such. We don't know his fate after opening the ark and all the animals leaving. Noah just kind of falls out of the record. Although we know that he lived. Heck, he was still alive. I think, I'm not sure if he was still alive during the time of Abraham. But we're pretty sure Shem was, because there's some confusion as to whether Melchizedek was just another name for Shem. Noah was like the old people. He lived into his 900s, I think. And Shem was part of the new generation who, at best, would live into your 500 or 600s. Until lower and lower and lower, until people were basically only, people weren't really living to over 200. Of course, everybody says, oh, that's just a bunch of hooey. And you're going, it's just because you want to think that we are the best it's ever been today. Anyway, I'm sorry. This isn't really what I was going to. What I was talking about was this whole idea of being in captivity from Ether 10. These guys being in captivity. And I'm thinking, it kind of says an interesting thing given our current politics. Our system was made so that it would kind of move slowly, if it moves at all. You could enact laws, but it was supposed to be somewhat difficult. It was supposed to be kind of a consensus sort of group. You would really have to get a pretty decent consensus before anything passed. And there was a lot of compromise and stuff like that. We always used to, you know, that was the view of it from earlier generations. I was taught that as a school child, that this was kind of how it would work. The founding fathers didn't think about parties, and parties became very, very, seemed to become more and more powerful as time has passed, to the point to where now, like the Democratic Party likes to think that it is really, you know, it really has kind of a right to governance. If it was popular vote, I would have to say that this was the first election for a long time that Republicans, which is the other party, the party of Lincoln, they say, although I don't know. Anyway, that the Republican Party actually had a majority of votes. People are trying to figure out exactly what happened. It even looks like about 18 million people just didn't show up to vote or weren't present from our last election, the one in 2020. It seems like 18 million people just checked out. And people are trying to figure out what that is. You know, there's some people who say that the Democrats are being taken out by the rapture, and that 18 million people were just taken to wherever, heaven, because of how wonderful Democrats can be. I'm not saying that there aren't really good people in the Democratic Party. The problem is they don't exercise any power. And that's sad. Regardless, I look at this whole idea of captivity, and I say to myself, well, how do certain groups feel about things? I am a classical liberal, and it's only been in the last few years that the Republican Party, with a lot of influence from Donald Trump, who's quite liberal, really. He has really attached itself to principles that tend to motivate me: liberty, small government, stuff like that. You never would have heard the Republican Party of the past talking like this. They just wouldn't have done it. Just as much as Democrats have been about large, smothering, mommy government, the Republicans were always about government needs to be in bed with industry so that we can more easily make large fortunes. These were older stereotypes that they don't seem to be holding very well. It always used to be that the Democrats were always supposed to be the party of kind of the working guy, but they haven't been for a long time. They've been the party of, they've been becoming the party of the special interests for a long time, and trying to give more political power to fringe groups. And it bred virtue signaling and stuff like that. It's an interesting thing to watch. Regardless, you could definitely see if the Jaredites were definitely, I don't know if they definitely were, if they're family-based, it seems like they are to a certain extent, except it always seemed like for a long time, when a king would be toppled, he would be toppled by a disgruntled son. It wasn't really the whole point of having particularly separate groups. So I think the Jaredites really hung together in a kind of post-flood Babylon sort of way. They were just a break-off group. But they still considered themselves that way, so I think they all stayed together predominantly. There was a couple of times, and this particular thing in Ether 10 was one of those times where a son would sway half of the kingdom to him. Sometimes they would even act like they were two separate kingdoms for a little while. But it never really tended to last. It would only be for a little while. And then they would either conquer and I don't know what conquering means. I don't think that word was ever used. They would get the other half of the kingdom and it would be one kingdom again. There seemed to be kind of a social need to be one kingdom. Anyway, and so I think when it comes to being held captive, I don't think it had to do with, maybe it didn't have to do with being in jails or being locked up. Maybe it had to do with they weren't in power. Like classical liberals like me, we've gotten to the point to where we're almost just kind of, it's never going to happen. We are never going to get liberty back because there's only two real parties in the United States. It's very weird. And every place else where parliamentary things stand, there are a number of parties, and you have to do coalitions, and, you know, you have to make deals with each other to get a certain constituency group. These guys, their parties tend to be smaller, and there tends to be a lot more of them, and any particular parliament session has seats that are sat in by members of several parties. Several parties are represented in parliament, yet they tend to get into coalitions to get a big enough group to have control of the government. You know, to be able to choose who the prime minister is, to be able to fill cabinet positions, stuff like that. America's never been like that. So it's always been just basically the two parties. There have been tries at third parties, but they're always quite, almost nobody does that. I think it's kind of sad because I think certain groups would get more of the things that they value dealt with. There was two parties. So in our thing, you actually have to change a party, which is not a democratic thing in the United States, is the ruling of a party. And if you were in the party that wasn't in power, it's like me, I'm a classical liberal. I'm very happy right now that the Republican Party is taking upon itself several of the tenets of classic liberalism, starting to think of smaller government, which is totally new in the last probably about 50 years. I'm an outlying freak, was talking about making government smaller. Both of the parties were enamored of a larger government. But with that larger government tasked with different things to do. And I'm really excited about the fact that Donald Trump right now has gotten some people with him that are really, they're talking about government efficiency. I'm not into efficiency. I don't care if the government's efficient or not. The less efficient government is, the more liberty people enjoy, because government just isn't able to get in their way. Like, in Tucumcari, there's a whole lot of ordinances. I swear those guys just take a look at the ordinance handbook of Albuquerque and say, we need to enact all these ordinances. And you go, no. Of course, you know, the state government... The state government exercise a lot of control, and municipalities and places like that basically just have to enact ordinances that the state has basically forced on them, whether they really like it or not. They don't have a lot of control. At least in New Mexico, the predominant law enforcement is state police. So the state gets to say what happens. We've been quite fortunate that the large rural area of New Mexico is able to exercise its influence to make sure that we aren't all saddled with rules that only Albuquerque or Santa Fe really care about. Anyway. So when an opposing party to what you would like to see and to where your loyalties are, in the Jaredite time, this seems like it was much more of a family thing, and some brothers would go off with one brother, some brothers would stay with the father, and that's where these separations would lie. And I think when they say being held captive is just saying, you know, things weren't going the way they wanted them to. How do Republicans feel when Democrats are in charge? And you go, well, they might feel somewhat powerless. And that's a kind of captivity, I would think. So I would see it kind of in those kinds of things. I don't think it was really that the people were behind bars. You know, they weren't being held in jails. I don't think that's what the captivity meant. I think it had more to do with having to do what the other side wanted. You know, the power struggle within basically the family. And I one gets the impression there didn't seem to be separate cities among the Jaredites, honestly. Or at least they didn't make much mention of it. I don't remember any mention of it. People would sometimes separate themselves. I remember during the whole Akish thing, the old King Omer had apparently gone by the seashore. To get some distance from what was happening. And it wasn't like, you just didn't get the impression that he broke out of prison or something. You know? I think the same terminology was being used. He was under captivity by his son, Jared. There was kind of a concept I don't know if you could call it a democracy, but it seemed like that once a person would get control of half of the kingdom, that was meaningful. You could actually hold on to that control and continue to deal to get the other half. There certainly seemed to be this concept of halves. Only see a couple of places where anything seems to be geographical. We didn't see these people really splitting up and going into different parts of the land. Or if they did, it seemed like that there was an incredible need for ruling over the whole. It wasn't really a geographical thing. It seemed to be more people. a population thing. I rule over half the population. I don't know if that was what constituted the kingdom. Some places do it as in land. Some people do it as in people. For all I know, the Jaredite concept of it was people. You know, half of the kingdom could have been half the people following me. And claiming me their king, as opposed to my father. And captivity may have meant I live in a settlement, a place, a locality that is under the rule of someone that I don't agree with. That could be captivity. When you listen to some of these, I don't know what to think of them. Some of these celebrities, and they come and they say, you know, well, if Donald Trump becomes president, I am leaving. I am out of here. I'm not going to be in America anymore. And by and large, the majority of them don't do a darn thing. It's just something that they say that's supposed to have great meaning and supposed to gin up. I don't know what's supposed to gin up. A sense of secession? No. Not. I guess it has more to do with not wanting to be a part of something. And I could see this captivity in the book of Jared. To, you know, if you're a conservative Trump lover, he's not a conservative. That's why I think it's hilarious that everybody says, well, he's the leader of the conservatives. And you go, then I don't know why you guys call yourself conservative. He's very liberal. Now, he may have leanings more toward classical liberalism like me. But anyway, anyway, that's probably more like that, you know. If somebody's held captive, that means that they perhaps are surrounded by people of a different politic. You know, it's like, oh, I'm the only conservative in this town full of liberals, which I think is funny because David's kind of with the title liberal. I don't like it. To be liberal is to be open-minded and let people do what they want. Anyway, which I am. Says I don't care. Says just don't tell me what to do. I won't tell you what to do. But it's like, no, you can't be like that. It's important that we have the dominance. We have the king. We have the leadership or whatever. And that we can force you to do things the way we want them to be done. And you go, I'm not interested in that. I just want to be left alone. I'm not a very good person for being in government because I'm too easygoing. When it comes for that, you know, which is, Anyway, so that was what I was thinking when I was reading the 10th chapter, the very end of the 10th chapter of Ether. We went through several generations of people who are basically in captivity. And I was trying to picture that and said, are they in chains? It's like, no. It says it's just that they are being ruled over people that they don't want to be ruled over by. And that, it's actually kind of a visceral description of what's happening. You know, I'm caught in a circumstance where I can't do what I would normally do. It seems like even when there were righteous leaders, now at this time, the righteous leaders couldn't get dominance over the secret combinations. They couldn't wipe them out or get rid of them, which is really what you have to do. You can't parlay with them. You know, you can't take over the government and all of a sudden they go, ah, oh, gosh, snickety snap, I'm not in charge anymore, darn it. They don't behave that way. They will be lawless when they're not in charge of the laws. They will not keep the rules, you know. They won't declare a winner or a loser. That's what's so interesting about today. Joe Biden is really wanting to take the high road, and Donald Trump isn't really a high road kind of a guy. Well, they said, oh, yeah, the last transition, Trump didn't invite Biden to come and do stuff like that. They were practical enemies. And there was no smooth transition of power. Just Trump left and Biden came in and started doing everything the way Biden wanted to do them. Mostly just trying to erase everything Trump had ever tried to accomplish. You know, it's fine. You're the government in power. You can pretty much do things within the strictures of the Constitution, or at least what little of the Constitution we actually abide. Now Joe Biden's doing the whole old-fashioned thing of, oh, no, I invited you over, and we shook hands, and I had lunch with you and stuff like that. They're all doing kind of a continuity of government thing, which was the way it was in the old days. It didn't really change things too much. You took over, and you didn't really take over. You just sat in the chair, and you administered what the last guy had left you, and you do stuff like that. You have to understand, you know, when the people say, well, Donald Trump's such a rotten guy, and you go, well, you know what? He was treated so badly. Not just by the bureaucracy, but by his own people that he had been, you know, by and large recommended to him. He isn't a traditional Republican. He's not playing by the Republican rules, and he was by and large really treated badly. You know, if you were to rate his administration by the people who had been in his administration as Donald Trump went along, he fired a lot of people that had been recommended to him. Because he just didn't know. He was just this guy. It wasn't like he had been part of the Republican power grid at all. He was seen as this horrible outlier, and he couldn't win, they thought, and Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president, and she was already, you know, well versed in the party apparatus, and you know, it's not going to be any problem for her. She was just going to carry on. There's just going to be a woman up there giving all the press conferences as opposed to some guy who was the president. So that was really the thing that was going to change by and large. She was going to, you know, she had played the game. She had been the first lady, which was nothing. That's the president's wife. So she had arranged to get a Senate seat, and she and Bill moved to New York so she could be the New York senator, which was a gift from the Democratic Party, or from whatever part of the Democratic Party she is loyal to. Trump was this wild fly ball out of left field, and he had a couple of people help him use some tricks, mostly on how to get how to win the Electoral College. He wasn't going to win the popular vote in 2016. He didn't. But he won the Electoral College. And people just, you know. And after, and he became the president, whether anybody liked it or not. And let me tell you, nobody liked it. There was Republicans, which was kind of his party, but not really. You know. He was able to win the nomination with the Republican Party because he was a businessman, and the sentiments around the party were, we really want a differentiator. We really want more of a businessman than of a politician. I think that got him through the primaries, and then just because they always do, the Republican Party apparatus went into action to try to help him win. It didn't matter that he was Donald Trump. What mattered was he had put an R after his name. Even though in the past, I'm sure he had been a pretty staunch New York liberal Democrat. It doesn't matter. The parties just want to win to a certain extent. I think the Democratic Party has more loyalty tests. You can't easily get into positions of power in the Democratic Party as easily as you can in the Republican Party. It's just the way it is. That's how Trump kind of did it. This next administration with Trump in there is going to be far more interesting, because Trump isn't going to take a lot of the Democratic to the Republican Party's advice. And let me tell you, when he was trying to get, when he would propose legislation, if he couldn't do it by an executive order, he couldn't do it, because the Republicans were against him too. They tended to side with the Democrats as opposed to their own president, who had an R after his name. So that's what's stunning about the whole thing. is that probably what killed him more than anything else was the people. He had taken a lot of advice from others because, frankly, he didn't know how to be a president. I think this time coming in, he's going to be a lot more confident about it. He'll be able to hit the ground running as opposed to hit the ground and do things. There was a lot of things you can do. Really hadn't been acted on too much by other presidents, but he had used executive orders to great effect. That's why his first 100 days as president the first time around worked so well. I think he had consulted with people who said, so when I'm the president, what can I do? How can I do it? I'm not going to promise anything I can't deliver. And his power came from the fact that he was able to wield executive orders well. He at least got that kind of authority. And that's good. Now he's not coming at it knowing that he might do better in Congress. You know, everybody says, oh, look, we got all these Democrats, these Republicans. You have to understand that most voters vote along party lines. In fact, in some states, I seem to recall in New Mexico, when I was young, the first or second time I voted, we used to have it by machines. You would go into a machine and you would click the little switches, and then you'd pull the lever, and that would register your vote. There used to be big switches at the top that just had the parties. If you just wanted to vote along party lines, you could vote along party lines. And that happens a lot. So when you say, Trump won the popular vote, and you go, there's a lot of people that just voted all Republican. You know, there's Trump, and then whoever was the senator, they voted for the Republican senator, and they voted for this and that. They kind of got rid of those party switches. In New Mexico, we have Scantron cards now. In S Scantron cards, and you can't just vote party. You have to vote for each individual thing. And so anyway, interesting. And that's what makes all this stuff happen now. I think Trump has a little more of Republican support. There are more people that were voted in to Congresses and to the House of Representatives and to the Senate to a large extent because they align themselves with Trump. Not just as Republicans, but say, no, no, no. I like what Trump's trying to do. I am a Trump, I'm a Trump because, let me tell you, how many Republicans from the past, like, who can I think of? Romney. Mitt Romney was, there's a term for it, a never Trumper. Which says, I don't ever vote for anything that Trump supports because I don't like Trump. It's almost like even if it's a pretty good idea, if it's got Trump's name on it, I won't vote for it. I would rather vote against it. They kind of wanted to show off their power by not being taken in by Trump. If you called it the Trump wing of the party, you go, there was no Trump wing of the party. There was the party, and then there was Trump. Now there's kind of a Trump wing, I think, this time around. And I think Trump may be able to to do more of what he would like to accomplish. I see what he would like to do. It's just the whole thing is, I don't know if he can really pull it off, which is always the typical thing. In the United States, you need to have at least it's not a consensus. You need to have the toleration of the three branches. What's been the most powerful thing of all was Trump's ability to independently, for the most part, to independently choose three Supreme Court justices. If there's anything else more telling about Trump, and the reason why that I'm a basic Trump supporter, is that he put originalists in the Supreme Court, which we hadn't had for a long time. We had a few. There was a handful, but not many. Certainly not enough to win judgments. Now there definitely is. I think it's a six, it's definitely 5-4, it's often 6-3 split for a lot of things that come to the Supreme Court. The leftists are absolutely livid about this because they considered the Supreme Court their branch of government, their possession. That was how most left-wing ideas got introduced into governance, was you would have these guys would rule on things, and let me tell you, there is much to do among lawyering and judging over crafting questions and how to bring them to the Supreme Court so that left-leaning court could enact what you wanted. That was the power of Roe versus Wade, was the fact that they said, yes, we're going to make abortion legal. And there was certain reasons why they were going to be made legal. And every lawyer who wants to be a constitutional lawyer is constantly trolling the universe for something they could bring to the leftist Supreme Court to enact. And once it's enacted by the Supreme Court, there really wasn't a lot you could do about it, or a lot anybody wanted to do about it, because the Democrats tend to run the legislative branch too during most of this period. There was no incentive to stop the Supreme Court from doing things or to enact laws. And the Supreme Court's tendency is to let laws stand. Or at least back then it was, because, it was a Democratic Party held thing. The court tended to be more ideological than any place else was. It wasn't really built on party, although people would kind of explain it that way to simplify it. Anyway. But I'm sorry, I'm getting ready to go through the gate here, so I'm probably going to be kind of quiet, but I'll get back to this. It's not like that anymore. Now, with these or originalists in there, they're doing all kinds of things that totally put the whole, I guess you would call it the whole system, the system that had accreted, that had been built up, that was gone. That's now gone. So everybody's trying to figure out what to do about this. And can I tell you, a lot of good things are happening because good morning. Thank you. I don't know what those guys say. And they mumble it so much, it's going to be hard to figure out. It's like some kind of chant. Little thing. Go team! Kind of like that. In most of our meetings, that's kind of what happens too. So it's like, oh, okay, well, there it is. Anyway, so it's been really interesting to watch. I think that was the most amazing thing that ever happened, was Trump's ability to get those three Supreme Court justices put in. And it's had more of an impact in the United States than anything else. And I think it's excellent. Excellent, 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 excellent. You put in good people. The Democrats are screaming about several things. They want to be able to put term limits on them. You know, it's the first time you ever heard anybody talk about, well, we're going to impeach them. And you go, oh, okay. Supreme Court justices were just kind of hands off. You didn't really touch them particularly. I'm not saying you can impeach them and get rid of them. Of course, it's up to the body itself what would matter. And at the end of the day, I don't really know that they're going to put together something that really, really matters. You know? It's like Donald Trump. He said, well, he's been impeached. And you go, yeah, mostly, mostly as a personal attack just to get rid of him. Not really anything else, so. And you're going, well, you're a Trump lover. And you go, you know, I hope Trump does some good things. He talks a good talk. I tend to struggle to know if he's really going to come through. You're always hopeful. I'm always hopeful that good things will happen. But there's no assurance that that's true. Yeah, turn it off. Okay, well, I'm here at work. I need to do some stuff. And to say where things, I need to make some responses. I'm grateful for things that are happening. It's really interesting, captivity. You know, I'm sure there are many people who feel captive right now. That might be that whole idea of, if such and such a person becomes president of the United States, I am leaving the country, and you're going to try to flee what you perceive as the captivity of having to live under them. And that might be what the Jaredites thought of. Now, you have to understand that we are looking at a system that bears no resemblance to our own, that makes it tricky. Or it seemed like among the Jaredites, their kings could exercise as much authority as they liked. And a good king wouldn't exercise tons of authority, just have a good influence. And the bad ones would exercise a lot of authority to the point to where they would command you to be wicked on some level. I don't know exactly how that works, but apparently it did. So, we'll leave it at that. Captivity. How people think about it. Is Trump going to captivate the American people and make them do his will? You know, I hope he does it. I hope he's the kind that says, we're going to reduce the size of government, we're going to do things a different way, even though it's okay to have income taxes because there was an amendment to the Constitution that brought in the income tax. Banking lobbies made that happen because they wanted a lot more money to play with. And they wanted to be able to control people's attitudes. And that's the most effective way to do it, is to have your hand in their pocketbook, which they didn't have before. You know, back in the old days, I don't think people really cared who the president was, because the president had no real effect on their lives. It's kind of like King Charles in England. King Charles has very little effect on anybody's life. His opinions are, I don't know, I don't even know if people even pay attention to them. And you go, that used to be the way the American presidency was too, because the American president was supposed to be a person that could deal on the same level, on equal footing with kings. And that was their point. It gave them a little bit of authority to do some stuff, but not really very much. And in the intervening years, the presidency has been empowered by mostly the legislature to do all kinds of fun stuff. It didn't, you know, it sounded good when the president was the leader of your party, to give him as much power as you could, you were kind of checked by the fact that the other party would have power. Well, it found out over time that it really didn't matter. They were going to pretty much do whatever it is they could do. They would pretty much do whatever the legislature told them. And that was very interesting. And the whole thing about, let's give the president more and more power, that way we can always blame him for the things that go wrong and it doesn't come back on us. And you go, yeah, but in the course of doing that, you've lost a lot of power. Anyway, so there was that. It's hardly, you know, and that's what's gotten us to this mess we've got now. The greatest thing that Donald Trump could do as president is to eviscerate first the executive branch. Don't be so oppressive to people and telling them what they can and cannot do, and policing them really hard. And he seems to be about getting rid of that. After he's done effectively doing that, what he needs to do is tear up the presidency and put it back to the proper thing and to shove legislative functions back on legislators and make them responsible for that. The Congress of the United States is a study of how much power can I wield without bearing responsibility for it. And that's what they've been trying to do for it seems like decades, is trying to perfect that system. And they mostly shove it on to the presidency, and they don't challenge, they don't put together legislation to counter the Supreme Court. They've been starting to make things about that over abortion, which I think is the gosh-awful silliest thing. It's because people thought that women, they could capture all the women vote by, because all women want the power to abort their children. All women want that power, they thought. And maybe after this one, because it was such a thing that they said, oh yes, this is going to get us the female vote. All the girls are going to vote for the Democratic Party because we're the party of free abortions. And I don't know how that worked out. We're going to find out. Of course, we're going to kind of it's half figuring out what people want and half what you can trick people into doing. It's called propaganda. And it's kind of half and half. And they have been trying really hard to tell women this is the most important thing of our time, and it isn't. We might circle back to it if the economy gets fixed and it seems to be doing better. Then they may think about abortion again. The sad part is this is a horrible thing upon which to base a lot of things, because, I'm sorry, abortion is wicked. It's actually one of the most evil things that we tolerate. Anyway, so I need to let this thing go because I need to answer an email. So, all right, we'll turn this off and talk to you later. Bye.